Welcome back to Good Mood Podcast, where each episode promises to delve into the mosaic of Jeff Amos's life experience. I'm your host, Liz Leach, and I'm pleased to introduce you to this podcast. Jeff was born and bred in Sowerby Bridge, Coldale, West Yorkshire, where he's lived for over 70 years. This series of podcasts captures his story of growing up in Sowerby Bridge and how he entered into the world of performing arts and music. This podcast guarantees to provide an informative insight into life since the 1940s and opens up a perspective of how someone can choose to dedicate their life to creativity. Please subscribe to this podcast to be able to be alerted of new episodes, and also share this with friends and family who you think would be interested in the topic. When you have time, why not visit Jeff's website to find out more information about the work that he's done, which is jeffamos.wordpress.com. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hobnobs.
With the crews, yeah, and they don't want chocolate either. They want the plain proper hobnob.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Was that it? Was that like rider? Was that the main thing?
Well, that was like the lighting and tech crews, you know. So I used to always bring a few packs of them in. And it's like
keep the energy levels going.
The honey pot, you know. Yeah. You know, I did bring them a couple of packets of something else. Now, it might have been digestives.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It'd be like, what kind of day is this? What's happened to the hobnobs? Or was it Peter Kay said the SAS of biscuits?
Oh, yeah.
highly dunkable, can survive any dunk.
Yeah. Dear me.
Yeah. So, we were just talking about, weren't we, Jeff, around some of the things that happened in the local swimming baths.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about that, because it sounds intriguing.
It's intriguing, a bit bizarre, I think.
Yeah.
It was still went at Sowerby Bridge Urban District Council, so, you know, that was it. It wasn't anything to do with Calderdale as it is now. And I didn't notice it until 15, 16, and somebody said, oh, there's going to be a band on at the baths. Mm. And I'm going, oh, yeah. God, I can't remember his name now, but Martin, anyway. So went out there, I didn't know, and it turned out it were half a crown in, which you get a pint and a half of beer,
uh-huh.
You know, so that puts it in the perspective now. And the baths, for people that don't know, they were on Hollins Mill Lane in the middle of Sowerby Bridge, mm-hmm. that ran parallel with the canal at the top and the river sort of below there.
Yeah.
So we went and we all had our little rock and roll sort of clothes on and what have you, looking, we thought, pretty cool.
And I'm sure you were looking cool.
Yeah, compared to what the ballroom dancers, gams and suits. So anyway, we went in and, as I said, you paid that, and I now know to call it, the orchestra did two sets, you know. But strip tempo dancing, I mean, I know now there are a good few localish jazz players in there, you know, to keep that tempo.
Uh-huh.
And it was all very genteel and swinging around with waltzes and, mm-hmm. and what have you, and I'm bored. So somebody said, let's just go across the road where there's a car park there to the old town hall.
Yeah.
And that's where the town hall tavern was. So we slipped in there and we got served pretty easily. So we stayed there till we knew what time it was. Pie and peas, uh-huh. about the ticket, and in that time, while all the ballroom people were sat somewhere else out of the noise of this electric band, so we went in to listen to the band, and then we never went back after that. We went back to the pub.
Yeah.
But
so there was when the dancers and the swing band were having their pie and peas, having their interval,
yeah.
and sat down having the pie and peas, yeah. there were another band that got up and played.
A rock band.
A rock band.
As in those days, it was called a beat band,
uh-huh.
you know, and that was great. You know, that
so
was
what
right.
did you get in a beat band? Like, what instruments were played?
Well, it was a basic thing. It would be, so that there'd be a guitar, maybe a rhythm guitarist, a bass guitarist, drums, and a singer.
Mm-hmm.
Generally singing, sometimes it depended as ever, on where they were musically. Some of them just played some really, really great early rock and roll because they'd picked it up somewhere, off Radio Luxembourg, which we've come back from that a few times, and that helped a lot. And they'd take some of the pop songs, because there was a chart by then, and so they we just thought they were wonderful.
Throwing a few covers in there.
Oh yeah.
So were you cutting a rug then?
Did a bit of dancing. Yeah, not in the first little bit, but in fact, a bit. I don't know. Should we be doing this after watching that people dance?
So different, yeah.
But it was still sort of dancing pretty much together with us and the girls as well. So that it was okay. It was. Yeah. I look back with fond memories of it really.
So was that something that happened on a regular basis?
Through the winter. It might have been once a month. It's so long now, I can't remember. But I think the people promoting that saw the writing on the wall. I'm not sure how much longer. But I also find it amazing that they shut the bloody swimming baths down.
So the building's still there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
But the baths is... Yeah. The actual swimming baths inside has been shut for years, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But the reason they did dances in there is because you were saying they emptied the bath.
That's what I'm saying. To me, we're barking mad. They emptied the bath from October to maybe March.
So they actually closed it every year.
Yeah, put the boards across and they had the dances. Right. So you couldn't get a swim anywhere. It's like, well, you know.
And that's, what's that, 6 months? 6 months ago? Gone.
Strange to say the least, But that definitely, I mean, there was a pool of Halifax, but we were still in, we're in Sorby Bridge, we want to swim here.
Yeah.
I mean, I never went swimming because I frightened the, I got through in it when I was about 6 years old.
And that put you off?
For life.
Yeah.
I hate it. And because of my asthma, I brought a panic attack on, and then suddenly somebody realised that this wasn't fun.
You were not enjoyable.
And dragged me out. And I never even went again. I just wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Kids can be so cruel at times. You know, I mean, they wouldn't know. They thought it'd be funny because Jeff never comes in, we'll throw him in. Ruined what I would have loved to have not that happened because my kids and Joyce, my wife, they swam like fishers. And it's something I could never take
you
part could, in.
You couldn't join
just
in
couldn't
because of
it.
That.
Awful. Really. But we're a bit mad.
So another part of the music scene for Sorby Bridge was actually in the closed swim bath over a boarded up pool. And people dancing around on boards actually above an empty swim pool.
Yep.
That wouldn't get past health and safety now, would it? I don't think.
Absolutely mad. I'm just going to turn the biscuits around.
So we've reached the 10 minutes for the biscuits. Yeah. Yeah. Jeff is on with cooking biscuits at this moment in time. The important things in life. So one of the other things you've talked about as well, which I think would be great to share with the audience, is around being at school. So you've already talked about growing up in Sorby Bridge. You've talked about your earlier life and being ill. So you didn't really get into school at the same time as other kids.
No.
And then you joined the school and you could show the teachers that you'd learnt to read and that you were much more advanced than they expected you to be. But one of the things that you also talked about was leaving secondary school before the age of 16?
15.
And that you didn't have to sit exams, you just went out into the world at the age of 15. But you were actually invited back to the school that you went to.
At Ryburn, It was to do, I got a couple of friends teaching there, and it was the first year of the, what they call the Rosley Unit, raising school leaving age, to 16. And they had their own, like a little club building, if you like, you know, which is where they went. And they were a bit naughty, my two friends, because I think they, when I look back, I can realise that there were a bit of devilment going off here. Not to put me down, but they wanted to stir things up a little bit. And so I went in there, hair was long, denims, you know, the whole business. Would I be going towards 17 maybe. Mm-hmm. And so we're having a chat about, you know, what this new thing entitled and what we're going to do, because they still didn't do exams then.
Right, okay.
You know, so
there were raising the edge, but not in...
I mean, a year after, I think, that's when they brought it all in. And so I could feel that, well, they wondered who we were. I was, for starters, and then we warmed up a bit. And I explained what I was doing. I'd been doing, you know, some building work and then other things like that, and I was enjoying it. And I said, well, I could see that it was time to be finishing. And I just felt I wanted to say something to them that, look, you're going out into that wide world, but you'll get on. You know, not everyone can, you know, go and at that time, you know, go to college or whatever. And I saw one of the teachers there looking at me. And I said, but I need to tell you that there's a whole life out there that I've been doing that you can do if you can't do exams. Or and one teacher in particular was thunderous looking at me. I'd really blown what they were trying to, you know, whack into the kids, that you have to do this and you have to do that.
So that teacher obviously wanted the children to think that they needed to be ready to do exams, they needed to study, they needed to get through the exams to have a life after school.
Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh.
And your story is so different, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I picked up on this and I thought, right, well, I'm going in here, I need to tell them what it can be like. And, you know, I said, so I left 15, we didn't have exams, we didn't even have homework for the 4 years we were there. There's a little cheer about that, you know, and I'm watching teachers' faces, and I'm now beginning to enjoy this, because I can see what's happening.
That streak of rebellion.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I said, so, really, just take heart. I'm not saying you can do what I do, that's just silly, but don't feel that when you do leave school, then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And the particular teacher I have in mind, he got very stroppy with me. And, you know, oh, well, I mean, I don't think that's what we're really, you're here really for, Jeff, you know, and all that. And, you know, people need to be getting on with things. And I saw a few of the kids looking at each other and sat smirking. So he said, anyway, thanks for coming. And the kids stood up as one and gave me this standing ovation, you know. And I thought, yeah, they're not stupid.
Mm.
They've got it. You know?
Yeah, they know what's going
on. And it was awful when I saw the two women afterwards, and she said, we've heard. Brilliant, Jeff.
So when the two friends of yours that were teachers there actually made a point of inviting you because they wanted the students to hear that message from
you. Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't on message with the school.
Yeah, yeah. So it couldn't come from them?
No.
Otherwise they'd be out of favour.
They couldn't say that, but I could and did.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm walking home down into Triangle from Sorby, killing myself laughing.
Yeah. And I wonder what happens to them children that you spoke to them. Like, what, how that... Because it obviously had an impact on them when you were there.
It did. There's no doubt about that.
It makes you wonder,
I don't think I've ever seen them again, you know, oh, it's a small town. But I walked away happy, because I knew, and I hadn't planned that, it was just reacting to what, and suddenly you think, oh, hang on a minute here, you know. And to the credit, the two lasses didn't tell me what they were up to, because they'd said, we know you're capable of this, you know, after I met them in the pub that night.
Yeah.
And they couldn't stop giggling, because the staff room was in horrors.
There'd have been some sleepless nights after that, wouldn't there, from some
teachers? I wish I could have got back and said, you know what, I'm at Goldsmiths now, 31 years old, pick the bones out of that, mate. Because one of the things that said was, well, even then I understood already, we blossom in different ways.
Yeah, yeah, we do.
You know, it's not that treadmill, that awful treadmill that the poor buggers are in now.
Yeah.
It really is to me, it's... You're ruining the kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good. But that was good, and I'll chalk that one up to, you know, I mean, people round here now generally call me the Lord of Misrule, you know, and I'm quite happy with that.
Because... You can live with that one.
Oh, yeah.
You accept that one.
Oh, yes.
Take that badge and wear it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I obviously left something behind there, and I was, and when I look back, and I'm pretty pleased about that.
And you yourself, through all the story that you've shared in the podcast and everything you've talked about with regards, it's not only your working life immediately after school and moving into different areas of work, but then what you've done in performing arts and in music and in festivals and culture just goes to show that you don't need to have that.
I remember the careers officers coming on sometime in our final year, and it was about boys might get an apprenticeship or go in armed forces, and girls, well, they can work in a shop till they get married. And that was absolutely said.
Right.
They were hanging, and that was it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. That's your life outlook from the point of 15 onwards.
Oh, yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Have fun.
And, of course, we were told that at 15. Oh, God.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're kind of testament to that as well, aren't you, that you can forge your own future, and if you follow what you love, what excites you, what brings you fun, what you really enjoy, then actually what you can make happen is...
Yeah, I think so. I never sat down and worked all this out. I was just reacting to how I felt at the time. Then I went back and thought about,
which is what kind of, I guess what led you to then applying for Goldsmiths
eventually. And it was definitely for Celia. She hadn't have told me about it, I wouldn't have gone, because there is that working class thing then about, well, you know, bless her, love her bits for that, you know. She's got an OBE, I think, then, for something to do with social work.
Okay.
She's retired now. She's living down in the southwest somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
And is that social work focusing on working with young people?
I don't know what she did eventually, but because she had a degree out of that. So but she was client based for a good while, and then I guess she moved up into sort of more office management, I think.
Yeah. Time to check on the biscuits again.
Check it, hold it there.
Hold it, we're having a biscuit break.
Yep.
Do you know, Jeff, I've just spotted that picture there.
Which one?
This one. Which one are you looking at? Tell us a little bit about the bride and the groom and the two.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about,
It's wonderful. To me, it's a really, it's a great piece. It's a lovely piece of art.
It really is.
Margaret and I had gone off Keith up to Cliff Castle just to have
a look
round. And there was this exhibition upstairs, and they got a circular room there. And we looked up, and it had been that for 12 months they'd had a couple of artists in residence working with youngsters, who had sort of all sorts of different sort of problems one way or another, really. And so they were trying the artwork, and we saw that, and we just absolutely fell in love with it.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It's got humour. It's alive.
It really is.
You know, and it was a young lad, about 16-year-old, I think, because we talked to the artist. I think we were the first people to buy a couple of pieces. And it's absolutely glorious.
I love it. Can I take a photograph of that?
Of course, I'll put you on. Absolutely.
I'll make sure I take a photograph before I go, and then
it spoke to me.
Yeah, I just looked. I mean, has that been there the whole time I've been coming around?
It just shows how much notice you take.
I know exactly. My head's in the clouds, isn't it? I don't take any notice at all, Jeff. I've not listened to a word you've said.
Oh dear. But yeah, it's glorious. Yeah,
it is. It's lovely.
There's a place in Sorby Ridge on the basin. There's a guy there, Rob Knight, who specialises in copying artwork and then putting it on to exactly the same paper as it was painted on.
Really?
And I'm going to take that down to him because it's on cheap paper.
Okay.
And I don't want to lose it.
Yeah, and see if you can replicate it.
And just get it on some different one.
Yeah. So talking about lighting,
One
of the things we wanted to talk about is how in your time in theatre and doing performing arts and doing some of the stage work, you really specialised in lighting.
I did lighting design and rigging and everything like that. That was, I never knew about it. Right. I don't know if we mentioned in a past work that when I worked with this company called John Bull Puncture Repair.
Yeah.
And that was my introduction to it. And again, it always comes back that people see things in me I haven't a clue about. You know, oh, he'll do it, you know. And so it was great. And that goes back to Celia, because her husband was the artistic director in Birmingham of the Arts Lab there on Summer Street. Yeah. We keep coming back, don't we?
Yeah, you know? These connections.
Yeah, always, yeah. A bit like the Hadron Collider.
Oh, what's the connection there?
I don't know, I just made that
up. Oh, did you? We're yet to discover that one.
Oh, no, I've never
there will
been.
Be a connection I've never somewhere. Been there.
And it's, so the two technicians there, God love them, I mean, they could have just ignored me, you know. But it was a day when the, a time when the arts clubs were still about, the arts centres, still about people wanting to do things with people before it got on to be quite sophisticated, you know. And and they showed me an awful lot how to do it. They could see, well, I was quite upfront and said, guys, I don't know what I'm doing at all. They've just put me in a seat in the truck and dragged me down here. So after having a good few laughs, right, well, this is what we do, you know. We haven't seen the show. I said, have you? I said, well, I have. And they were clever because they said, well, we'll go down on the stage and we'll walk around and you tell us where things happen. And it's lovely because I didn't think that already they were listening and they were very happy to teach me somehow about, you know, it's, so, and I'm wandering around. And I've got a good memory about images and things, so I can see things. And they were going, all right, so they were taking notes. And, can you remember what colours? I said, well, yeah, there was this scene when it was sort of, and so we got on really well. And they sat with me that week and just took me through the board. It was an old-fashioned one, thankfully, not the new computerised ones. And I just felt really happy doing it. It was just something I could do. And all I was moving, you know, faders up and down in a sense. But...
And that was when the show was going on, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah.
So it was like live lighting design.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Seat of my pants stuff. I'd be really, you know, I'm nervous as bugger, you know, but not wanting to mess it up. And so I got through it pretty much all right.
At what stage did you get involved in deciding what the lighting would be like for the play? Rather than... managing the lighting for the performance.
That was probably about a year on, because that particular group had just been, they never had a sort of regular lighting person.
Yeah.
They'd just worked with the in-house technicians and tell them sort of what they wanted. So it was about a year.
Right.
I felt confident enough to say, well, actually, why don't we, and they were happy, because they just moved backwards straight away. You know, and of course, you know, you do dress rehearsals, so they'd have a look at that. Or I'd show them the lighting states before we actually went in to some rehearsals.
So they could get a sense of what you were putting across.
It was very much, however, we might like a different colour there and a little less light on it, you know, bring it down a bit. So, and that's how I learned.
Brilliant. And then you transferred, when we talked last time, I don't know if we recorded this bit of the conversation last time, I don't think we did, but you did talk about how you transferred all that knowledge and skill that you developed by just getting on with it and doing it in a theatre performing arts sense over to music performance.
Certainly not at the major level, that came later, but I just used to get really pissed off. It's always in music now, and I just like them to get changed into some cleaner gear, you know. But that's my theatrical background then coming in. You just look sloppy, and I think really you should pay attention to what your audience might be looking for. I know it's not a popular view even now, except when you're in the higher echelons of rock music, for etc. And I just say, well, why don't we look? It doesn't affect your music, so don't get on your high horse about that. That was the first couple of bands I talked to. But why don't I just bring in some little extra lighting, some lighting from behind, some back lighting? Because I know I've got what you're playing now. I know the moods. I know the set list.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, all right, you know. It's, but they wouldn't have bothered their asses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you need it to just sort. And that I was really pleased with that, and it just looked tons better. Mm-hmm. And I know there'd be an argument with the musicians, well, it's about music, it's not about all else. Yeah. And
I was just about to say, because musicians are absorbed in the music,
yes, aren't they? Certainly in jazz world, yeah.
And a lot of performance, when musicians are performers, they're in the music, it's the experience of bringing the music, without really that view, in a lot of instances, of the experience, like you were saying, for the audience, like, how is this coming across for the audience? And you just really hit on an important point, that you weren't doing it just from a point of aesthetic, what does it look like? You were trying to bring the mood of the music into the setting of the lighting.
So I've always felt strongly about the audience shouldn't ever get left behind.
Mm.
And I know there was a piece in The Guardian 2 or 3 weeks ago about someone in the States going to sue Madonna about doing about 4 or 5 hours late. And I can't remember which columnist it was for The Guardian, but he got a bit snotty. He said, you know, they've worked hard, blah, blah, blah. You know, we shouldn't, it's not, I can't remember all the words, but this is not about, you know, it's got, we pay the ticket, we need to be, you know, and it's wrong.
Mm.
I mean, to come on 4 or 5 hours late, it really isn't bloody right. Mm. You're just treating your audience with complete disdain.
Yeah.
And then there is that thing about they're in this little cocoon, you know, they don't know about going home in cabs or a last bus or a last train anymore, or having to leave early because the babysitter. And you shouldn't. And that Guardian writer, I was quite shocked, because I just thought, well, the paper's what it is. Have you not got this? You know, that people have to go home. They've spent these days. How much is it for a decent gig? 40, yeah. 50, 60,
I mean, that's standard. I've seen tickets for Bruce Springsteen last year down in London. It was £350 for a basic ticket.
Fucking
that was just for a basic stand. Yeah. Stall, like what would be standing stalls ticket.
Yeah.
So I reckon to go see Madonna at the moment, if you use that as a benchmark, probably is about £200-250 a ticket. So absolutely, you know. And there was that, I mean, that you get certain musicians that are so dedicated. A few years ago, I think this might have been before the pandemic, not a massive fan of Foo Fighters, not my style of music at all, but David Grohl broke his leg whilst live on stage.
Oh, I can remember, yeah.
And he took off to the hospital, got put in a pot, came back and finished the gig.
Yeah.
With his leg in a pot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's a different level of dedication to your audience, isn't it?
Don't just knock them to one side. I mean, they're paying, they're buying your merchandise, they're buying your bloody albums and CDs, they're turning up at paying this ridiculous prices now.
Yeah.
And it isn't the band half the time that sets that. It's these, don't get me off on the ticket, bloody companies. That's something horrible. But
the industry's quite.
It was wrong, that, and I do think the writers should have been a bit clearer about, well, actually, it's not good.
Mm.
You know, you're just sneering at your audience.
Mm. So that must have been something that's been important to you through the whole of everything you've done. So that, I know we started with talking about lighting and how you wanted to bring this element in so that it was an additional layer of experience for the audience, but you clearly have that across the piece for the audience.
Yeah.
It's not just the lighting, it's the whole experience.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know where that's come from, because I didn't have a background in the performing arts, you know, but I just felt that, well, it's, come on, just go with it a bit here. You know?
And without an audience, what would the arts be?
Nowhere.
So,
No, that was, I thought, a badly written and thought out article there.
Mm.
I did see a couple of days later there were some letters in that were just telling him, you know, come on, you know, that's that really, it's,
which the is wrong why, take on things.
Yeah, which is why I never really wanted to go and work in that area of music.
Mm.
I mean, often the bands are all right, but when you get to a level, it's about record label people there. They're poncing around, you know, causing trouble. Just get the fuck out of it, you know, and let us get on with our job.
I went over to a conference in Manchester years ago, probably about 25 years ago now. I've forgotten what the conference was called, but it was a big music conference.
That's 10 minutes slow, actually.
Obviously. And it was just as artists start to be doing independent stuff. Lily Allen had released herself independently.
Yeah.
Arctic Monkeys were just releasing. And then that really annoying song, Crazy Frog, was at number one. Independent, I hated it.
Yeah.
But all of the music industry at that conference, all they talked about was, well, if artists are doing this independently, what about us?
Well, tough.
They were just, and it were a really, you know, the tension at
selfish,
the conference,
isn't it?
Was really telling.
You could go and work with a band and get a bit of a salary from them.
It's the industry, industry.
Because it all comes down to you and I paying all that extra money for what about us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want them to be out of work and what have you, but...
As long as it's a fair, ethical divide, isn't it? That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Jeff, well...
I'm just going to look at my biscuits.
Yeah, you keep running off to look at these biscuits, Jeff.
Actually, I'm having a glass.
He'll be gone a while.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Good Mood Podcast, a series that gathers together a rich mosaic of Jeff Amos's life experiences in performing arts and music. Hosted by myself, Liz Leach, we look forward to you joining our next episode. In the meantime, please subscribe to the series, recommend to friends and family who you think would be interested in this topic, and remember to visit Jeff's website, jeffamos.wordpress.com. We look forward to you joining us at the next episode.